I may start off getting a little bit of trouble with Russ this morning, because, you know, when you preach, you got to drink a little bit of water. But he might have to do a little bit of counseling with me after church is over with. So this morning I want to talk to you about a lesson that I've been studying that's been on my heart recently. You know, I grew up in Edgehill Church of Christ, and there used to be a little note they put on the podium that I read every time that I was up on the podium. It said, "You are facing the greatest people on earth, so please address them as such." Realize that you are the greatest people on this earth. When I started studying this lesson, and when I started trying to find out the answers that I wanted to find out in God's wisdom, I started going down this path trying to find the answers that I wanted. But it kind of carried me in a different direction. When we get to that point of the lesson, I'll let you see where I'm going into a different direction. I told Russ when I was doing this lesson, I became like a bad dancer. I started stepping all over my toes. So this morning I may step on a few toes once we start really looking at it, but it's going to be a good hurt. The title of my lesson is Heaven's for Real. You know that we've faced a lot of loved ones that we've lost this past couple of years. This congregation has been touched with the loss of life. And y'all know I lost my dad this past year. So there's some questions that I had that I wanted to address along that line. You know, when I was younger, I grew up in a big family, a large family. And we do family reunions every year. And I go to that family reunion and I get there and there'll be people I didn't know. But somebody had to know we were at the family reunion. So my mom used to tell me, "That's your cousin so-and-so, that's your uncle so-and-so, and that's your aunt so-and-so, that's your second cousin." So right as soon as she said that, a bond started developing because we had the same name. We were a part of the same family. Just knowing that they carried my same name and that we're a part of my family, it created that bond. We were cousins, so that created a bond right off the get-go. The question that I had that I started to address was the same question I had many years ago when my mom passed away. I lost my mom, I lost my grandfather Driscoll, who was a gospel preacher. Some of y'all knew that he was a huge influence. I lost my grandma Bear, she was a huge influence, all within a few years. And the question I asked was, will we know our loved ones? Will they know us as who we are? And the answer I got back then was, why does it even matter? You'll be in heaven. There'll be no more pain. There'll be no more sorrow. You'll be walking streets of gold. You'll be singing. You'll be happy. You know, God's scriptures gives us an outline of what heaven's going to be like. And it gives us what we're going to be like. So I started going down this road just trying to discover that. And there's examples of what people are like in heaven. My first one I want to read to you this morning comes from Luke chapter 16, verses 19 through 31. And a lot of us know this is the rich man and Lazarus. And starting in verse 19, it says this: "There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and lived in luxury every day. At the gate was laid a beggar named Lazarus, covered with sores, and was longing to eat what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs came and licked his sores. The time came when the beggar died, and the angel carried him to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried in hell, where he was in torment. He looked up and saw Abraham far, far away, with Lazarus by his side. So he called out to him, 'Father Abraham, have pity on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his fingers in water and to cool my tongue, because I'm in agony in this fire.' But Abraham replied, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received good things, while Lazarus received bad things. Now he is comforted here, and you are in agony. And besides all this, between us and you our great chasm has been fixed, so that those who want to go from here to you cannot, nor can anyone cross over from there to us. The points I want to make out of this verse, you know, the rich man had his identity in hell. Lazarus had his identity in heaven. They were known for that. Abraham had his identity in heaven. He's known for being Abraham. You know, the transfiguration that we can find in Matthew chapter 17, 1 through 8, Peter, James, and John recognized Moses and Elijah. They were recognized for who they were. They didn't change. They were recognized for who they were. You know, in Matthew chapter 22, 31 through 32, actually, you go back to verse 23, this same question came to Jesus. How would we be recognized in heaven? And the answer he gave in verse 31 and 32 was this: but about the resurrection of the dead, have you not read that God says to you, I am God of Abraham, God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. He is not the God of the dead, but of the living. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are recognized for who they are in heaven. 1 Corinthians, and I love using a lot of verses because it's within my study to get my point across. But in 1 Corinthians, Paul is pretty much talking about our time here on earth and reflecting to what our time will be like in heaven. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 12, it says this: For now you see only a reflection as in a mirror. He's talking about we can see God all around us in his creation. We see it as a reflection in the mirror. Then we shall see face to face. When we go to heaven, we'll see God face to face. Now I'm known in part. Then I shall know fully. Now I have a kind of understanding of what God and his love and all that is involved. But then I'll have full understanding. And even as I am fully known, Paul say, I'll be fully known, I'll fully understand what's going on. But why does that really matter? Why does it really matter that we know each other? All right, we're at that crossroads, and now the Lord's taking me a different direction. Because he's telling me, if you read the verses prior to this, you'll start to understand. The verses prior to this I used at the Lord's Supper a few weeks ago. And it reads as this. And starting with verse 2. If I have the gift of prophets and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move a mountain, but do not have love, I have nothing. If I give all my possessions to the poor and give over my body to hardship, that I may boast, but do not have love, I have gained nothing. Love is patience. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It does not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrong. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always preserves. And starting in verse 8, love never fails. Go down to verse 13. And now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. You know, when I went to that family reunion, I wasn't just going to a gathering. It wasn't just a religious gathering that I was going to. It was reuniting a family. What's heaven going to be? It's not going to be a religious gathering. It's going to be reuniting a family. This is where it really started to hurt my toes, because what does that truly mean when we think about that as a reuniting of family? Because you can't have a family reunion in heaven if you're not a family on earth. And when you think about that, what that really involves about being a family on earth, we look at things totally different. We start developing that bond. And as I speak this morning, don't get me wrong, because this is a congregation that knows that. Because we are joined together. We treat each other like family.
Amen.
There are some congregations that I've been to that they are, they're co-Christians. It's like going to work and you go to work with co-workers. They are co-Christians. But at what point do we stop and say we're satisfied with where we're at in our relationship with one another? At what point do we want to get closer and closer as a family and develop that relationship like we're told to have with God? Because let's put it to perspective. You know, if you go to work and a co-worker doesn't show up for work, oh, so-and-so's not here today. Do we do the same thing when somebody shows up to church? Oh, so-and-so's not here today. Are we like our family, and you're expecting a family to be somewhere? What do you do when you have a family member that doesn't show up somewhere? You're like this. Where are they at? You may be pulling up that phone and text them, where are you at? Are you okay? This is where my toes began to hurt. Brothers and sisters, this is what my goal is, and please forgive me for not doing this as much as I need to do this, but treating you as a deeper family that you truly are.
Yeah.
So when a member of the congregation doesn't show up here, how do we feel? Are we worried? Are we wondering, are they in a car accident? Are they needing our assistance? Or do we go out the door and have a relationship with our other family and forget about the person who wasn't here this morning? You know, we develop a bond in the fire service that just draws us closer because we have to. We eat together, we sleep together, and then we have that same bond. I can go anywhere in the world and go to a fire station and tell them I'm a firefighter, and they welcome me in. They'll ask me to eat. They'll ask me, just because we have that bond in the relationship. You know why? Because we have to die for one another. We have to be there for one another. There's a couple phrases that we use in the fire service that's present all the time. Never leave your brother behind. And everybody goes home. That should be our philosophy here. That when our brothers and sisters are in the depths of their troubles, we're not going to leave our brothers behind.
Amen.
That we're worried about them, that we're going to be a part of their lives. And our goal here at Edge Hill, and the elders and deacons, and Russ and them have been working about the program for our shut-in, that everybody goes home. That's our goal here. Our goal here is we all go to heaven. And the only way we can do that is the how we love one another, how close that we get together. It's starting to cut it. That relationship is just not about God, and that's important, but our relationship with one another is important. So much that in Matthew chapter 18, verse 20, he says, "For where there are two or three gathered in my name, there I'm with them." And what he's saying here is, when we come together for this family gathering that we're having this morning, is that Jesus is right here with us because he's a part of this family. This is just not a religious gathering that we're trying to do and check off the marks on. This is a gathering of family this morning. And when we approach it that way, our whole perspective changes. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 25 says this: Not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, so much more as we see the day approaching. We're here because we need each other. We need to uplift each other because we're all facing trials and tribulations. We're all facing those difficulties in life. You know, in Matthew chapter 10, verses 28 to 32 tells us this: Do not be afraid of those who can kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the ones who can destroy both the soul and the body in hell. Are not the sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground outside of your Father's care. And even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So don't be afraid that you are worth more than many sparrows. Whoever acknowledges me before others, I will acknowledge them before my Father which is in heaven. But whoever disowns me before others, I will disown them before my Father which is in heaven. What it tells us that we are special to God, that He knows us to the point that He knows every hair that is on our head. And that's the relationship that we need to develop as a congregation here. That we know each other when people are struggling, because they're special to us. They have meaning to us, just like God has meaning to us, and we have meaning to Him. It puts our whole perspective on how we look at gathering together. Oh, I want to be at church. I want to be with my family and their family gathering, the family reunion. You know, that's what's going to make heaven real for us. Is the people here on earth that were the relationships that we've developed with God and Jesus and y'all. That's what's going to make heaven real for us. It's not that we're just going to be happy in the streets of gold. That's going to be great, but it's about Jesus. We used to sing a song when I was younger, and it was that title, Heaven's for Me. And the meaning of that song was, it's because Jesus is there is why it's heaven for me. It's because y'all will be there and Jesus will be is what's going to make it heaven for me. You know, what was read earlier this morning was 1 Peter 2, 9 through 10. As we really think about what this verse says, I think it really strikes home. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praise of Him who called you out of darkness in His wonderful light. Once you were not a people, did you hear that? Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had received no mercy, but now you have received mercy. The area I think that we struggle as the churches of Christ, as Christians, is what this really means right here. You know, when I was talking about earlier, just that bond, knowing that they carry the name of my family, I go to a family reunion, just knowing that they had the same name started developing this bond. Yeah, we have South Street Church of Christ, Cameron Avenue Church of Christ, we have the Crossing Street Church of Christ, Arlington Road Church of Christ, but we kind of stayed over here. And as I'm reading this, they're a part of our family just like we are. I don't know how to fix it. I've come up with ideas in my head. It's maybe we ought to rent out a park, and maybe we ought to rent out a school, and maybe we ought to have a family reunion one day. Maybe we ought to have a lectureship where we come together and study together. We do it somewhat. We visit churches for different reasons. We come together for fifth Sunday singing. But maybe we ought to realize what that family over there really means to us. We've got South Street right down the road. Maybe we ought to come together somewhere and have a celebration of familyhood to realize that we're all family. Because now they carry our proud name of Christ on their back just as well as we do, when we need to start building that bond. Instead of being churches over here and over here, maybe we need to start working on that. I don't have all the answers to that, but maybe that's something we need to consider. We also, as in the fire service, one of the great things that they do is a recruiting system for volunteers. Many years ago when I got into fire service, I was at the crossing and I bought a ticket for a turkey to support the local fire department for Jefferson Park. But Rick Farley sold me the ticket, started talking to me about the fire service. And he started telling me how
how the brotherhood worked. And started pulling me in and telling me, man, we're a brotherhood. You just won't believe it. He invited me to the firehouse. He was excited about the fire service and about the brotherhood and the sisterhood of the fire service, how we become brothers and sisters, and how I'm going to be by your back in the hard times and you're going to be there for me. So, of course, I wouldn't stop by the firehouse. And the thing was, not only did I see what he said, I heard what he said, but I saw it, and I was hooked. I was hooked to become a firefighter. And now I'm in the fire service. I'm a part of that brother and sisterhood of a bond that's just unbelievable. You know, the best recruiting system comes from us. Russ could be up here preaching every day for the rest of his life, and he can't have the influence that you can about getting excited about Jesus. Because when you're at work and when you're at home and you tell them about the family that we have right here, and you go to them with enthusiasm and saying, you won't believe the excitement in the family I have, the brothers and sisterhood, that they've got my back. They're there for me. We are a family. And then you just come to church and you'll see it. And you haven't even opened up the Bible once yet. And they come here and see the familyness that we have here, the connection that we have here. That's what's going to draw them to be a part of Christ's family. Because they can see it in us. Because we get excited about our family. And you haven't even opened up the scriptures. You're showing that they have value. That you wanted them to be a part of a great thing that you're a part of. So often, we miss that mark. So often we deal with our co-workers as co-workers. So often sometimes we deal with brothers and sisters as co-Christians. And we don't get that excitement and realize how special each and every one of us are to one another. You know, there's a song that we sing that says, you never mentioned him to me. When bitter land before the bar we stand, what deeply grave our soul will be. If any lost soul won there, she cried in deep despair, you never mentioned him to me. You never helped me, you never mentioned him to me. You helped me not the way to see. You met me day by day and knew I was astray, yet you never mentioned him to me. What sad day that will be in judgment if somebody comes up to me and taps me on the shoulder and says, where are you going? I'm going to heaven. You met me day by day. I was your thought, was your friend. I was thought I was close to you. Why didn't you tell me about all this? That would be a hard one to deal with on that day. And because, you know, for us, when we look at it in the family, there's three things that we always need to do here. We never need to leave a brother behind in difficult times. We need to be there for them in every way possible. Our mission is to get everybody home. Yeah. Everybody needs to go home to hear. So we're going to do with everything within our power. You know, in the fire service, we don't send anybody into the building by themselves because we're not going to leave them behind. They're going to see the depths of the fire, but they're not going to be by themselves. And if somebody does get trapped, we're going to do everything within our power, within our training, even put our lives on the line to bring that person back. With reality, we lose firefighters every year. And we're going to lose Christians every year. That's the way life goes. But it shouldn't be because we didn't do our part. And the other part of this is, you know, when I went to that family reunion every couple of years, you know what happened? That family got bigger. Every time I turned around, it seemed like it was 20, 30 more people there. That's God's family. That's why we have newborn Christians. Our goal is to make this family as big as possible. We want to bring as many people in this family as we can, because that's our goal here on earth, is make God's family grow, because that's what families do. They grow. Good example, Russell's family. If Russ gets excited about his grandkids, we were talking about it this morning, because he's excited that his family's growing. And y'all can have the same example for yourself. Your family grows. That should be exciting. That's what our goal is here, is to make this family grow. And,
you know, I want to end this with a little story. Carla, as I told you, we're going to be involved this morning. I just didn't tell you how. But now I'm going to tell you how. Growing up, Carla's been a huge part of my family, personal family. She's been to birthdays, events, and everything that was involved that our family does. She's been a big part of that. But Carla can tell you, it came with an initiation. My family, and Christopher can tell you growing up, this is one of the things that stick in his mind, of that initiation to be a part of our family. You just didn't say you were part of our family. There was a commitment to be part of our family. There's something you had to do to prove that you wanted to be a part of that family. Carla, I'm not going to ask you to do it, but what did you have to do?
The chicken dance.
The chicken dance. To be a part of our family, she had to do it in front of our kids, her kids. She had to prove that she really wanted to be a part of this family, so she had to do the chicken dance. So, but she did it because she showed her commitment to us and our commitment to them. It was something our kids could remember, because we had other people who became really close to our family and had that commitment. You had to do the chicken dance. And Carla can probably tell you a little bit more about that later on. But you know, to be a Christian, it takes commitment. You know, I can say I'm a firefighter, but until I prove that I'm a firefighter, it's a different story. You know, firefighters go through what they call the baptism of fire. That very first structure fire, when you go in with your brother and you stick by your brother, and then you don't back out of it in the deeps of the fire, that they know you're committed to this relationship, to the family of brotherhood and sisterhood of fire service. You're baptized with fire because you stuck by your brother and sister. There's commitments that you have to make to be a Christian. You know, Mark 15 and 16, it tells us, it says to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. There's your recruiting program right there. Go and teach to every creature, the recruit. But who believeth and is baptized shall be saved, but whosoever don't believe shall be condemned. You know, you got to show God that you're willing to commit. I can say I'm a Christian, but until I'm willing to make that commitment to that brother and sister and to be a part of that family, it takes a commitment. And then when you think about it, if you ain't been baptized, when you go into that water of baptism and you come back out, you're washed with what? Jesus' blood. So what's that make us? Blood relatives. We are now relatives by blood because of Jesus' blood. So if you're not a Christian, there's a commitment. Anybody can say they're a Christian, but it's that commitment to be a Christian that comes. But you know what? You know, if you're struggling with anything, and you're facing hardship, you're part of a family. So you ain't got to face it alone. So this morning, if you're having struggles with anything, I've been committed to stand by your side. I've been committed to make sure you get home. So if you're struggling with anything, you don't have to face it by yourself. You're in front of a family. In front of family, in front of everybody that loves you. I'll stand by your side. I'll pray for you. We're here for you. So to know that no matter what you're going through, you have family right here to be by your side. And if you're like me this morning, that was my toes were stepping on, but maybe I should take serious being here more often. Maybe I ought to be more concerned when a brother and sister's not here and wondering where they're at. To start not being satisfied at this point of our relationship, but working on this part of our relationship while we're together. If any of that struck you this morning, you have an opportunity to come this morning. Russ will be up front. Dale will be taking the prayers in the back. Anybody who wants a personal prayer. But you have that opportunity this morning to share and be with family. Would you come down if you stand and sing?